So we have the great fortune of introducing today's esteemed speaker, His Grace Rohini Priyaprabhu. Actually, he doesn't need any introduction. I mean, because in the morning, he was the one who introduced the morning speaker. So in the afternoon, now we are introducing him. But I guess they want me to get purified. That's why, you know, we'll speak something about him. So Rohini Priyaprabhu, he's basically an MBBS from BJ Medical College. And he joined the temple in 1994. And since that time, that is for the past 16 years, he's been speaking this message of Krishna consciousness, and tens and thousands of people in Bombay as well as different parts of Maharashtra, and now even different parts of the world, because he's traveling to various Western countries also, various parts of the world, have taken advantage of his mature spiritual counseling and mature spiritual guidance. And currently he's handling the position of Vice President in the Radha Gopinath Mandir Temple Management Council. So let us express our gratitude and thanks for him giving his valuable association to us today afternoon by loudly chanting.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuranmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we would like to give a very hearty welcome to all the devotees who have gathered here for today's Sunday feast program. So if you are all happy to be here, please let us chant loudly in a traditional style.
Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Today we are going to discuss on the topic entitled Vishal Hridayam. Anyone here whose name is Vishal? Good. So, our organizers, they have organized a series of four lectures, and all these four lectures are related to certain pastimes that have occurred during the month of Kartik. We finished off with two, right? One is Rama Vijay, and the other is, last time what did we have? Oh, last time it didn't happen, so we missed that. So today anyways, we are going to take up the third topic, Vishal Hridayam. I want to tell you the story of a young boy. We are good friends, and this is a boy who goes to school, everyday school, studying in the sixth standard. His name is Mohan. So Mohan has just finished the exams recently, and he had his Diwali vacations. So I asked Mohan, what are you going to do during your Diwali vacations? He said, I'm going to visit my grandmother. So I asked him, where is she? He said, she lives just on the plains of the Himalayas, or let us say the foothills of the Himalayas in Himachal Pradesh. I said, you're so lucky. In winter, you'll go to Himachal Pradesh. So I said, yes. Actually, I want to meet my grandmother too. So Mohan went to Himachal Pradesh to meet his grandmother. And one day he gave me a call, and it was a long call. At least an hour long. And he said, I have to tell you something very interesting. I said, all right. He said, during the day, I have a nice time. I go and see the scenes around. I visit the marketplace. We have a small stream running to our village. Sometimes I go and take bath there, play in the waters. At night, especially, my grandmother sits down and tells me a story. And I want to narrate you this wonderful story because I know you like Krishna. So I said, all right, please tell me. He said, I want to tell you how Krishna married all of his wives. I said, okay, go on. He said, Krishna, the first wife that he married, from Dwarka, he went to Vidarbha. There, as this young girl was about to be married to someone else, Krishna entered the palace grounds. He went to the place of worship, the temple of goddess Durga. There, Rukmini, she invited him to kidnap her. Now, this is interesting. It's like a double plot where someone says, you kidnap me and ask my father for ransom and share half. Only in these cases you find someone asking to be kidnapped, isn't it? So Rukmini is asking to be kidnapped. This young girl's name is Rukmini. And Krishna comes and there is a fight and Krishna takes back gloriously this young girl and gets married to her in Dwarka. I said, oh, that's very interesting. He said, did you know that? I said, yes, I did. It's nice to hear from you. So let me tell you about Krishna's second wife. So Krishna, after marrying Rukmini, for some time he was very peacefully staying in Dwarka. Suddenly, one of the residents of Dwarka by the name of Shatrajit, who sometimes felt that he should be better recognized than Krishna, happened to get a jewel by the name of Shyamantaka jewel. And he began to show off. So one day his brother Prasena took this jewel and went into the forest and never returned back. So Shatrajit spread a rumor that Krishna had stolen the jewel. And a search party was sent into the forest and they found it. And Prasena did not return. So he also claimed that Krishna most probably has injured or he has killed Prasena. So the rumor began to spread like wildfire to prove his innocence. Krishna went into the forest and found the dead body of Prasena and he understood the science of studying dead bodies. So he knew that, forensic medicine Krishna knew. So, any doctors here? Okay, there are a few. So the rest of you can ask them, what is forensic medicine? The study of dead bodies, to find out the cause of death. So Krishna studied that, found out that he had been killed by a tiger. Krishna said, this is not enough. I have to go and fight the tiger. Or at least I have to go and find the tiger because most probably because the jewel is not on Prasena, so the tiger must be having the jewel. So he went following the pug marks of the tiger. So Krishna knows what science now? I don't know what it is called. But maybe it's something to do with forest officers, you know. Tracker. Krishna is a good tracker. He knows the tracking science. So Krishna went tracking and he saw this tiger lying dead outside a deep, dark cave. So Krishna summarized. He concluded that most probably someone much more powerful than a tiger has killed him and gone into the cave. So he went inside the cave and there he found a young boy who looked very much like a monkey, a rickshaw, playing with this Shyamantaka jewel. So Krishna, not wanting to somehow or the other cause fear to the boy, he quietly crept up. The boy looked at him and he said, this is something interesting. Because in the dark cave, suddenly Krishna appears, you know. So that's an interesting sight. So the boy was looking at Krishna and Krishna said, shh. And he put his hand out to take the jewel. And as soon as he took the jewel away, the boy started crying loudly. And that brought from inside a big rickshaw, a big bear. There was a fight between the two. This bear had been living for thousands of years, millennia actually. And in his fight, he understood the only person who's capable of, you know, having such prowess is my own worshipable Lord. I am Jambavan and this must be Lord Ram, appearing in this particular form that I don't recognize. So he asked him, "Who are you?" "I think you are my Supreme Lord." And Krishna revealed himself. "Yes, you are my servant. I am your master." So he said, "I'm so sorry we had this scuffle. And why don't you marry my daughter?" Now Krishna is wondering. Rickshaw, small rickshaw, Miss Rickshaw. But when his daughter came forth, she was the most beautiful young lady. Very beautiful. He said, "This is my daughter Jambavati." You see, although Jambavan is a bear, he was born of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma once felt like, you know, maybe he was attending a class of mine. And he went like, he was yawning, Jamhai. So Jambavan was born like that. So Jambavati, most probably she had that lineage, you know, the genes coming down. So she was very beautiful. Right? So Krishna happily accepted her, took her back to Dwarka, got married to her. So that is his second wife. I said, "That's very nice. Wait, I'll tell you about his third wife." Do you know whose third wife was? Yes, Satyabhama. Now, Shatrajit, Krishna went back and returned the jewel temple. Yele, take back. And take back the rumors. Write a column in the newspaper. "I am sorry." So Dwarka News, Delhi News, carried that headlines. Shatrajit says, "I am sorry, Krishna." Krishna, no comments. So, but Shatrajit felt this wasn't enough. He was really feeling very, very embarrassed. Because all he wanted was that his fame should and glory should increase more than Krishna. And everyone on Dwarka was saying, "Just look at this rumor monger." So he said, "The only way I can save some grace is to establish a relationship with Krishna." So next day the tabloids carried a message. Shatrajit asked Krishna to marry his daughter, Satyabhama. Krishna accepted. So that was his third wife. Then Krishna went to the kingdom of Avanti, Avantipur, from Dwarka. And there were two brothers by the name of Vindya and Anuvindya. They had a beautiful sister by the name of Mitravinda. And they had arranged a swayamvar for her, and they specifically told her, "Don't choose Krishna." Now they did not know that she was a Hare Krishna devotee. Already initiated chanting 16 rounds. So on the day of her swayamvar, Krishna, because he's a super soul in the heart, he appeared there and she offered the garland unto Krishna. And that's it. Krishna took her back home, back to Godhead. To Dwarka. So that was the fourth wife of Krishna, Mitravinda. And one day Krishna said, "All right, it's been a long time, I haven't been to Indraprastha. Maharaj Yudhishthira has his beautiful palace. Let me go and see how things are, you know. Last time I was there was a forest fire, you know, and the whole Khanda forest was burnt. Mayadanav came in. So let us see what interesting adventure comes forth this time." Right? So he went to Indraprastha. And they had nice lazy days. One day Arjuna told Krishna, "Let us go and have a nice stroll in the forest." Let us go and ride in the forest. So they went horse riding in the forest. They saw the sights. They captured a few animals. They sent them back to their gardens to decorate their gardens. Others they set free. And then because they had been riding throughout the day, they said, "Oh, we are feeling a little hot, you know. So let us go and have a nice shower." So previously, shower means going to a river. Right? Into the flowing current. So they went to the river Jamuna. And there they had their nice, cool, refreshing bath. They came out and they dried themselves, put on fresh dresses, And they're just idling around. Suddenly they find a beautiful young girl walking along the banks. You know, just strolling along like that. Very beautiful. So Krishna told Arjuna, just go and ask her who she is, what does she want? So Arjuna went and Arjuna asked, my dear young girl, who are you and how come you're roaming alone in the forest like this? What is your purpose? She said, I am Kalindi, the daughter of the sun god. I'm roaming here because I'm looking for a husband. Arjuna said, yes, I have an eligible person here. She said, no, I'm only looking for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I've accepted him in my heart as my husband. She said, pakka, match. Shadi.com. Perfect match. So Krishna accepted Kalindi there, took her back to Dwarka and got married to her. She became his fifth wife. Now one day Krishna heard that there was an invitation from the king of Koshal. And the invitation was, anyone, there are 7 bulls in my kingdom, very powerful bulls. Now many of us, we don't know what are bulls. Imagine BMC trucks. Or best buses, you know, when they pop high down the road, you have to just move out. So 7 such bulls, and anyone who can, you know, thread them through the nose together. Now it's easy to yoke one bull. Maybe 2 of them, but you need to yoke them to a cart. But keep them together, oh my God. It is bull power. To get 7 of them together, the earth can tremble. An almost impossible feat. So Krishna said, this is interesting. Let me go there. So Krishna goes there. There are many princes, many kings who have come there. They have all tried their hands. Some simply gave up before starting. Some started but never finished. And the bulls were still waiting. It was the original bullfight, you know, the matadors and the bullfighters. Spanish. I think that must be in Spain, but Koshal is here. Maybe they took it from Koshal Desh. So Krishna goes there, he takes the rope, and everyone goes, what can you do, you know? Just look at you. Because when you look at Krishna, he appears like a 16-year-old boy always. Always like that. At the max, he may look 25. He may look. Right? And Krishna is always like this, you know, very slender. Sometimes you feel, oh, Krishna is, you know, blowing his flute for a long time. Let us put an arm rest here. You see, we have an arm rest there for Krishna. So it looks very slender and very, very delicate. So all of them said, we have heard of you, but that must all be fluke, you know. They have been internet gossip, blown out of proportions. So don't worry. See, we are powerful, really. They were broad-chested, you know, big, rippling muscles there. And Krishna said, no, let me just try, you know. Just let me try. I said, all right, it's your doom, go. So Krishna goes ahead. And just with hardly even making an effort, he goes ting, 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 as if he's suing, you know. And tick, 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 took. And all 7 bulls are, they've not just been threaded through their nose, but they are standing there as if they're meek like rabbits, you know. The king of Koshal is so happy. He said, I had wished that you would come to my kingdom. But you never came, so I thought of a plot. I knew only you could come. And the reason is, if anyone would do that, I would offer my daughter in marriage to him. So Krishna said, okay, all right. So this king of Koshal, his name was Nagnajit. And his daughter was of the name Nagnajiti or Satya. She was also called Satya. So Krishna married her and took her back to Dwarka. So I said, Mohan, I mean, you remember all of this? I said, wait, there are a few more to come. I said, all right, go ahead. So I said, in the kingdom of KK Desh, there was a beautiful girl of the name of Bhadra. And she wanted to have Krishna as her husband. So Krishna went there And he accepted the proposal of marriage, married her, got her back to Dwarka. That was Krishna's seventh wife from Afghanistan, KK. And then one day, Krishna heard that in the province of Madhra, which is present-day Multan, somewhere between Pakistan and Bharuch, or Haryana, let us say. He heard that there was a beautiful daughter of a king by the name of Lakshmana there. She wanted to be married to him, but circumstances were not allowing her to do so. So he went there in a swayamvar and said, "Here I am." No, Krishna just walked in. "Here I come for you," he says. So Krishna walks in, she puts a garland around his neck, Krishna brings her back, marries her in Dwarka. These are eight wives of Krishna. And then he said, and in this way, Krishna went to Prag Jyotishpur, he killed Narakasur and married 16,000 girls. And I said, "Hey, wait, eight and then 16,000? What happened?" He said, "Exactly. When my grandmother was narrating this story to me, I also told her, Tham, Haji Tham." The grandmother was thinking that maybe, you know, it's getting late, he may want to sleep, so fast forward. You know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and 16,000 more. She said, wait. What is this? What is this 16,000 more? I'm ready to, you know, stay awake. Don't worry. Narrate in great detail. Who is this Narakasur? Why did Krishna kill him? How did he kill him? Please explain in great detail. So similar type of question was asked by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadev Maharaj. Shri Rajo Uvach, Yathahato Bhagavata Bhaumayena Chatastriya Niruddha Etadacha Achakshva Vikramam Sharanga Dhanva Dhanvanaha. How did the Supreme Personality of Godhead kill Bhaumasura? What was the reason that he killed him? And why did he marry 60,000 girls? How did that all come about? Please explain to me in great detail the activities of the wielder of the bow called as Sharang. So here, Parikshit Maharaj, he is addressing Krishna as Sharan Dhanvanaha. One who wields the Sharanga bow. In other words, I want to know the activities of Krishna, not who's playing the flute, because those activities are of a different kind. These are chivalrous pastimes, and I'm very much desirous of hearing these chivalrous pastimes. You know, sometimes when we distribute books and we distribute the Bhagavad Gita with Krishna riding Arjuna's chariot, and Arjuna is there with his waist belt flying in the air and his upper cloth flying in the air, and you know, he has his Gandiva bow in his hand and his quiver of arrows are quivering there, and Krishna is sitting in front holding the yoke, the four horses of Arjuna, the white horses, he's, you know, holding them. So many a times, or quite often, we have faced this argument, we don't want this book in our house. Why? Because there will be Mahabharata in our house then. Krishna on the chariot, bows, arrows. Already there is enough Bharat there, we don't want Mahabharata. So people have this idea, but they do not understand that the cover, which they think may lead to a great war or is indicative of a great war, what it has enclosed within it is the pristine philosophy of how to attain peace. perfect peace. Very few people have this understanding. And those who have this understanding are truly blessed. Right? Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram surida sarvabhutana gyatva mam shantin mrichati. Knowing Krishna as a chariot driver of Arjuna brings about real peace. So that is the Bhagavad Gita. So the chivalrous activities of Krishna, and especially his activities where he exhibits himself as a warrior prince, is not only astonishing, amazing, adventurous, but it is also very sweet. And for those of us who can access these emotions by delving deep into the pastimes of Krishna's chivalry, chivalrous acts, then we can taste these emotions without going to 70mm screen. Yeah? It's all there and graphically described. So Parikshit Maharaj is telling Shukadev Goswami, slow down, please. I want to hear more about Krishna's pastimes. Why are you, rushing forth? I mean, you described Rukmini's entire episode in one whole chapter. Then Jambavati and Satyabhama together in one chapter. And after that, the remaining five princes in one chapter. Now, 16,000 in one line? One shloka? What is this formula? How does it fit in? I mean, I can understand there's a graph going down. 1:1. 1:2. 1:5. 1:1. In one verse, you finish off Narakasura and you finish off the marriage of 16,000 girls. Please. Now, so, Maharaj Parikshit, within his heart, he feels that maybe Shukdev Goswami is thinking, I have very less time. No, we can never be sure when the great bird will come. The bird of death that is going to bring death to Parikshit. The snake bird. When it is going to arrive, and when is that bird going to cause the death of Parikshit. So maybe Shukdev Maharaj is thinking that, let me try to wrap it up and wrap up and try to explain to him as much as possible. But Parikshit is saying, hey, please, Maharaj Shukdev, you remember what I said in the very first canto? Because in the very first canto, Shukdev Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj has explained his desire to all the sages gathered on the banks of the Ganga along with Shukadev Ji Goswami. He explained his mood that I have come here with 7 days warranty period and my guarantee is going to get over definitely after 7 days. That's for sure. But within the 7 days, what do I want to achieve? And this is how he explains it. Tammopayatam pratyantu vipra gange cha devi dhrita chittamishe dvijo prasrishta kuhakas takshakova dashatvalam gayat vishnu gatha. He says, Tam mopayatam pratyantu vipra. Oh dear sages, consider me as a surrendered servant at your lotus feet. Whatever you tell me, I will do. I am just surrendered unto you. So he says, this is what is my disposition. Gangecha devi dhritachitta ishe. And I say this unto you, I hold you as worshipable within my heart, as much as I hold Sri Ganga Devi, who has sprung forth from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And similarly within my heart, I hold the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. specifically in relationship to you and Ganga Devi, whatever you destine that I should be doing within the 7 days, I accept it wholeheartedly. And if some of you are feeling a little bit uncomfortable with the idea that very soon there is going to be some interruption, because many of you have a lot of affection for me. You know, my whole family, you know our entire history, you have been related to them, you have been associated with our lineage. And therefore, many of you have affection for me. And out of that affection, maybe your mind is slightly dwelling on that magical thing that is going to approach me and bring about my death. Right? But kuhakas takshako va, let it be that magical snake bird or let it be anything else. You remove that iota of pain, an iota of discomfort or any feelings that may somehow or the other take your mind even a fraction of a bit away from this particular from giving unto me that which is necessary according to the disposition that I have taken. My disposition is totally surrendered unto you. So let this thought only be within your minds, within your consciousness. Let nothing else distract you. Therefore, Dvijopasrishta, yes, that Dvija, that young Brahmana boy has created it. Nothing can stop that creation anymore. So forget about it. Once it has been created, it has been destined to do something, let it do what it wants to do. Let us be prepared for whatever destiny has, you know, in store for us. But right now, please give me that which a surrendered servant should receive. And then he says, Dasatvalam Gayat Vishnu Gatha. He says, and if you don't mind, you know, it's like very cheekily saying, my suggestion is, please go on singing Vishnu Gatha. Yeah, he says, please give unto me because I'm totally surrendered to you. And after surrendering himself, says, but I have one small suggestion. Gayat Vishnu Gatha. Please go on incessantly singing the glories of Lord Vishnu. So, Shukadev Maharaj, I've already declared, here is my will. See, it is properly signed on stamped paper. No one is going to blame you because this is what I've declared in my will. You go on extensively glorifying the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No shortcut, please. That will come later on in Kali Yuga. People will want shortcut later on. But for me, I want that you should extensively glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Shukdev Maharaj again has a question. Parikshit, are you not afraid of death? Now, pehle din to bahut bahaduri dikha di, lekin panchve chhatve din tak to kuch ho jata hai na. You know, 7 days, someone is decides, all right, 7 days, like Maharaj Amrish, I'm going to fast and live only on water. First day, second day, third day, fourth day. Aur kitna time hai? Influence of time. Time destroys everything. Isn't it? All our energies, everything is destroyed by time. So by this time, wouldn't Parikshit's resolve be deteriorating? Definitely it should be deteriorating. Definitely. Because we cannot change the course of time. Kalosmi lokakshaykrit pravriddho. This is me. I personally, I am time itself. And as time I destroy everything. That is Krishna's, these are Krishna's words. Definitely Parikshit's resolve, his strength, his energy should be deteriorating. But there is something more powerful than the Kala energy. That is the energetic person himself, Krishna. So when Krishna comes into the picture, Kala takes a back seat. And the Krishna nectar, the Krishna Amrit, rejuvenates all our depleted resources. That is Krishna Katha. It is not that we become impervious to the effects of time. It is not possible. Prabhupada said, when he was in Jagannath Puri, he said, as a young boy, I was to come to Jagannath Puri, because in Jagannath Puri, he was walking along the beach and showing them Haridas Thakur's Samadhi, his disciples, and he was showing them Haridas Thakur's Samadhi, and he was explaining the glories of the sea, the ocean there. And they're walking along the banks. And then Prabhupada stopped with his cane like that in the sand, and he said, I used to come here as a young boy and used to run on these beaches. Today, within my heart, I still want to run, but I can't. Not with this old body. Don't think this will not happen to you. Now, many of his disciples who are closely catching up to the age that Prabhupada was then, say the same thing. Most probably at that time, those words were just philosophy. Today they are realization. Today they tell us. And 20 years down the line, we are going to have that realization. Don't think this is not going to happen to us. Time is going to have effect. But our resources, the energy that has been depleted by time, the only object that can rejuvenate it is Krishna. And Krishna's narrations of Krishna's pastimes. Kim aushadi prichasi mooda durmate niramayam Krishna rasayanam piba. This is a recommendation given by one big acharya. He says, what? Yeah, you're feeling very weak, so you're going to go into the hospital and put in 10 saline bottles and you'll feel, okay, I have a lot of fluids now in my body. Good, go. Oh, your heart is getting a little, so you get a bypass surgery. Maybe put a pacemaker. Right? But it cannot give, pacemakers are not racemakers, you know. Just because one has a pacemaker now, one cannot go on with the same level of energy. Not possible. Right? Oh, kidneys are not functioning, we take on another kidney. Teeth are not teeth, so one has some enamels put in, dentures. Ears are not functioning, one put in some instruments. But what happens when we as a soul can no longer function in this body? How do we replace that? Right? So, we may try so many different ways, medicines, to rejuvenate this body. And it appears for some time, the body looks good. It looks healthy. It looks. For some time, it flaps a little more. You know, like a scarecrow. I remember as a young child, I used to visit my grandmother, and we used to have a nice game, because her hands were so soft, you know. The skin, I used to go like this. Shh. I say, see, your skin is all folded up. And she would laugh. That's it. That was a game. I used to find it very funny. How a skin would all wrinkle up. Right? And you leave it and it would go back like that. It was a funny game. You know, it appeared wrinkled up, all dried up, and then it would go back and have some life again. Because once it wrinkles up, there's no blood flow there. And so it would become parched. And then you leave it and slowly some pink color would come back and you'd have laugh. But that's about it. That's what this body is. For some time there are fluids early in the early years, then slowly they deplete, slowly the organs start dysfunctioning, and then it's dried. Simply flapping around like a scarecrow. So Kim aushadi prichasi? What is the use of going and, you know, going for a chavan prash now? I mean, there was only one chavan muni who could do it. That was the original chavan prash. He took it by the mercy of the Ashwini Kumars, and from a 1,000-year-old man, he became a 10-year-old, maybe 20-year-old young boy. Because Sukanya was 16, 14, so he must be 20. Like that. None of the Chyawanprashas worked after that. They still don't. It just gives a feeling of, you know, I feel like a 60-year-old man feels like a 20-year-old boy starts running and then really starts feeling like an 80-year-old man with a heart like that. Can't do much. So, Niramayam Krishna Rasayanam Piva. There's only one Rasayana that can really deplete all our resources. Because the soul is Sachidananda. The soul is, in one sense, not affected by the changes of the body, but because of the close connection with the body, the soul feels those changes. The soul feels itself becoming old. The soul feels itself becoming diseased. The soul feels itself becoming dried up. The soul feels all of this. And finally, at the time of death, the soul feels the pangs of death. Misery. So Krishna Rasayan allows the soul to rejuvenate its original consciousness, the soul's original consciousness. It gives back the amrita that the soul is looking for. And that amrita is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That is the amrita, Krishna Rasayan. It is not that you start drinking Krishna Rasayan and you become Nutrimal Dada, you know. You become, again, very healthy. That's not the idea. The idea is that the soul regains its original consciousness and is unaffected by the changes of the body so much so that at time of death, the soul is ready to make its final journey towards the eternal world. Right? So most probably, Sukadeva Maharaj is thinking that Parikshit, you are going to die very soon. Yamaraj is going to come and take you away. And Parikshit is saying, don't you know? Wherever Krishna Katha goes on, Yamaraj comes and sits there. He must be somewhere here most probably. Look at the person next to you very carefully. You know, maybe we'll be able to see them again at one particular point of time in our life. Yes, Yamaraji comes to listen to Krishna Katha, and therefore the sages, they were inspiring Suta Goswami, you go on narrating the pastimes of Krishna, because as long as Yamaraj is sitting here, his office is closed. Yamaraj is on leave. And if Yamaraj is on leave, we have chutti too. We are free from death. Right? So Parikshit Maharaj encourages Shukdev Goswami, don't worry. Even if Takshak or anything comes, I am ready. You just go on narrating Krishna Katha. And even if still the idea of death, you know, you cannot see me going with the hands of Yamaraj. Don't worry, Yamaraj is here. I won't go with him. He'll sit here. I'll go back with the Vishnu Dutas, wherever we have to go. Yamaraj won't take me. He's here sitting, hearing Krishna Katha. So anyone who, you know, is sitting and hearing Krishna Katha is, for those moments, free from the clutches of Yamaraji, or even the thoughts of Yamaraji. I tried this at one point of time, and maybe some of you have done it, maybe you noticed it, or you have done it and you haven't noticed it. But you may try to notice it. For a single moment, whenever you're hearing Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, or you're chanting Krishna's names, just for one moment, some moment of time, that one moment, try to focus on it completely. Just focus on it completely. Right? And just see how everything else dissolves. It's very magical. How all other, everything in the existence simply dissolves. You're not even aware of its existence. It's as if there is eternality in that one moment. It's not a complete feeling of liberation, but it gives us an idea of what it would be to be liberated. You could try it out alone, together, just try it out. Let us do it now. Let us all chant Hare Krishna and you all try to focus on any one word for a moment. Just try to focus on it. Yes? Some of us may achieve it. Some of us may achieve it later on, but let us do it. And see if you are even aware of any other sound vibration. See if you are even aware of anything else. If you try to be aware, you'll become aware. But if you are focusing on just one name for one moment, you know, let the mind just focus. And see that effect. Feel that effect. Yes, let's do it. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I did not, because I was trying to hear everyone. But if some of you felt, try it out alone also. Just try to focus on one. Or you're reading some pastime and just focus on just one particular act of Krishna. Sharanga Dhanvana. The holder of the Sharanga. Everything else will dissolve. So that is Krishna Rasayan. So Maharaj Parikshit told Sukhdev Goswami, please slow down, as did Mohan in Himachal Pradesh. So Mohan told his grandmother, please tell me in great detail. So then his grandmother started narrating. She said, there was once upon a time a king. He was very powerful. He was the son of Mother Earth, Bhumi. Therefore, they used to call him Bhauma. Young Bhauma stayed with his mother and learnt all arts and sciences from her. Because he had the qualities of Bhumi, such as Dhriti and such as strength, perseverance, he turned out to be a fine, young, powerful, perseverant man. And then, seeking adventure, he set out. In his adventures, he met many, many powerful personalities. He became very close to some of them. These personalities were inimical of Krishna, like Bana. Bhauma became such a close friend of Bana that Bana would start telling him that how Krishna actually is an enemy and how by one's prowess actually one can get whatever one wants, because Bana had 1,000 arms, you know. So it's very powerful. And being a son of Bhumi, Bhauma was also very powerful. But because of this mentality, they became so selfish, so exploitative, so merciless, and so much against anything that would stop their enjoyment, that any injunction in the scripture which said that you must surrender to someone, they completely rejected it. Thus, because of their activities and their own selfish desires, slowly but surely, their consciousness adopted the qualities of an asura. The consciousness became contaminated. The mentality became demoniac. And people started calling them Banasur and Bhaumasur. And they were very happy. We achieved some status in society. Like today, who are the famous people? Those who create the most news on page 3. And page 3 is not somewhere where a decent person would want to be. Right? So, Bhaumasur and Banasur were like that. You know, having a very, very active nightlife. They had so many friends visiting bars, discotheques, gambling on cricket matches, so on and so forth. I know only these 3. You can add a list to the list later on if you know some more. And specifically, Bhaumasur, his kingdom that he inherited from his mother, a small kingdom, not his mother actually, but somehow it came in his inheritance. He established his capital as Prag Jyotishpur. And Bhaumasur was very intelligent, because his mother had given him all these sciences. She had trained him in all the sciences. Bhumi Devi. Now Bhumi Devi, what had happened also was, and this is point worth mentioning, is Banasur, one day as they were talking with each other, the topic came up about Krishna. And Banasura said, "Hey, I've heard that he's your father, is he?" And Bhauma said, "Yeah." An expansion of his was my father. He said, "Was." Because he did not like to tell anyone whose son he was. That side of his lineage he did not want to reveal to anyone. Because his father was Varahadev, you know. And someone like Bhaumasura and Banasura on page 3, they don't like to say that my father came in the form of a boar. So he was feeling ashamed of being the son of God. Just because he thought as a boar, he's abominable. He was feeling inimical towards him because he thought, as a son of God, I should be the only enjoyer. Why has he given so many other people, you know, the rights, the Pandavas and everyone else to enjoy? So he felt as if his father had cheated him. And then he had Banasura also who said, "You're right." So good company. So Bhauma became very much inimical towards his father. So at Prag Jyotishpur, he established himself or he protected himself by such scientific, advanced, technological, you know, arrangements that never has there been anyone who has, you know, has made so much, who has had so much technological advancement at his fingertips. His Prag Jyotishpur was like an iron fortress. This fortress has had unlimited soldiers who were simply guardians of the fortress. The citizens were completely else. There were unlimited soldiers simply as guardians of the fortress. The fortress had doorways at strategic points which were locked with magic. Only if you know the magical keys, if you had the magical keys, could you open the doors. Now outside this was a huge moat of water. And within that moat of water was sleeping a very, very powerful, genetically modified creature. This was a person who had 5 heads and who survived. Never that has happened in today's, you know, scientific laboratories, that a person with 2 heads can survive. Very difficult. And even if they survive, it's they are put into a circus, you know, like clowns. He was a person with 1 body and 5 heads. And his heads, despite being on one shoulder, they looked so very effulgent. It was as if 1,000 suns were glittering at the same time. Therefore, no one was able to look him directly in the eye. And his name was Mura. Such characters always have names like that. Eh? Mura, Bhura. So Mura was there. And because he was so effulgent and people could not see him face to face, at the same time, because of his own particular habit, his one particular hobby, that was to always sleep. He would lie down in those waters of the moat, sleeping constantly. At least Kumbhakarna was sleeping in his bed. This fellow was sleeping under the water. With one mouth, you open one, you can drown. 5 mouths, think. He's sleeping there, so powerful. He'd constantly sleep there. And because he was underwater, his effulgence was somewhat mitigated. People could go about their normal business. Now this Mura had created a specific barbed wire fence all around this moat, his moat. This barbed wire fence was fed with such energetic ions. It was like atomically charged fence. You know, you see those sci-fi movies, you know, sometimes you touch someone and bzzz, They use that in the West, you know, stun guns, you know, like that. They hit someone and something, the nerves are stunned for a moment, 15 seconds or so. So Mura had something much, much more developed than that. An entire barbed wire fence like that. And there were charged ions flowing through it, not electricity. Not electricity, charged ions flowing through it. I mean, positively destructive. Every single part of that barbed wire fence was like an atomic bomb. Much worse than that. And beyond that, Banasur had developed, somehow or the other, he had developed that area of space in such a way that it contained a very poisonous gas. People think that this bio-warfare technology they are developing now, mustard gas and things like that, this was much, much way ahead. Beyond that was an electrical fence. Beyond that was charged, ionized moat of water. Anyone steps in it? Gone. And beyond that were unmanned fortifications. Howitzer and Bofor guns, but on remote control from inside. No one had to man it. And beyond that were very, very difficultly arranged rock formations. You know, person goes in through one, doesn't know where to come out from. Like that. Bhul Bhulaiya. And Banasura staying inside such a protective, you know, area. This was his Prag Jyotishpur. Right? Now Banasura, he became so arrogant that one day he said, Earth, everything is mine anyways. Let me do something more. So he went to heaven. There arrogantly he charged at Indra's palace. Indra threw his thunderbolt. Banasura just took his spear and said, Durja Sim Sim. Indra's thunderbolt was rendered useless just by spear. You see, the son of Mother Earth, no? So any thunderbolt, earthed down. Any electricity discharge that comes, you earth anything, you put an earthing, it goes to Mother Earth, she absorbs everything, no? So son of Mother Earth, now this is technology for those of you who are scientifically minded. Right? Nothing happened to him. So everyone simply dispersed. So he went around romping in his palace, you know. Ha, 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 ha. And he heard his own echoes and he looked at, I don't want anything from here. And then he saw the mother of Indra, Aditi. He said, ha, ha. He goes to the mother. And Aditi is a very cultured, sober lady. She's neither afraid, and she neither, you know, pays much attention to him. She's very sober, sitting right there. And Banasura, he sees that this is an old cultured lady. I mean, not old, but elderly cultured lady. Somehow or the other, because being raised by his mother, you know, so he has some maybe weak corner or soft corner for elderly women. So just goes and says, ha, 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 and takes away her earrings. Now just imagine, front page news in the Brahmand Express. The mother of Indra's earrings have been stolen. Can you imagine this theft? What it means? Arre, mahal mein se kuch utha kar le gaya chala. Meri maa ke... Baliya, are kaan ki baliya. And this is sheer arrogance, isn't it? People will always remember, Indra, apni maa ko nahi bacha paya. ran away, leaving her mother alone. So Indradev, this is what, he never took anything else away from that palace, nothing else. He just took away those earrings, Aditi's earrings. And then he said, well, I've taken Aditi's earrings, now what else to do? Upar gaya, beach mein tha, niche jata hun. So he went into the oceans. He went to the palace of Varunadev. Now Varunadev, generally he is considered to be a very elderly gentleman. So he looked at him and said, whatever you want to take it and go away from here. So he went and took his flag. Now when you take away a flag of a powerful king, it means the king has lost all of his authority. His umbrella, flag and umbrella. He took away his umbrella. The chhatri or the umbrella is considered to be very, very important. So he took away Varuna's umbrella. And then he said, something else I must do, something else. So he went to Mandara Parvat. There he went to Mount Meru, which is made of gold. And he specifically went to that portion of Mount Meru where all the demigods would come and enjoy. But they needed special access to enjoy on that Parvat. It is called as Mani Parvat. Mandara, beautiful valleys, you know, there are streams of the best juices that is flowing from there, entire streams of just jamun juice coming down or mango pulp coming down, and when they crash against the mountain, the Trikuta mountain there, which are in the lower ranges, just because they are flowing and you know there is some friction with the mountains, they produce jewels and gold there. So that is Mandara Parvat. And amongst that, there is this entire peak of absolute solid gold called as Mount Meru. And on that peak, there is, on Mount Meru, there is one particular peak of Mount Meru that is known as Mani Parvat. It is with beautiful jewels on that. Gold with beautiful jewels. And that is where many demigods with special access, they enjoy. So he went and captured that and said, aaj ke baad sirf main, tum nahi. If you want, you can come to Prag Jyotishpur, take a coupon from there. So he took over the dominion of Mani Parvat. And then he said, enough for one day, and he went back. Now Indradev, when he saw him go back to Prag Jyotishpur, he said, this is too much. Now I must go to Krishna and tell him, do something. Right? So he comes to Krishna in Dwarka and says, do something. So Krishna says, all right. So Krishna, he makes arrangement to go to Prag Jyotishpur. And suddenly he calls for Satyabhama. And he says, do you want to go on a picnic? Of all the principal queens, eight of them, Satyabhama is one who has a volatile nature. When Krishna is quiet, she incites him. When Krishna is incited, she does something else to balance out, and in this way have reciprocal relationship. That is why she is of a volatile nature. So whenever Krishna needs some, you know, a different dimension, a different rasa in life, he knows where to go, Satyabhama. This lady, she has multifaceted personality. You know, she is good at multitasking. So he goes to Satyabhama and said, would you like to go on a picnic? Satyabhama says, why not? Yes. So Hridayananda Maharaj in that commentary says, that is why husband and wife go on picnics. Because Krishna asked Satyabhama to go. Just as sometimes, you know, husband tell their wives, would you like to come for shopping? Oh yes, definitely. So Krishna says, you know, I have to shop some stolen items. Would you come shopping? So he asked Satyabhama. Rukmani would not come. Jambavati would not come. Satyabhama is ever ready. Because Satyabhama's nature has been described as adventurous. And for a long time, Krishna hadn't taken her out on an adventure. She said, let's go on an adventure. She said, oh, beautiful. Yeah, let's go. And specifically, Satyabhama is the origin of Mother Bhumi. Satyabhama is the original Bhu Shakti, the Bhu potency of the Lord. And from this bhupotency comes this dharitri or dharti or bhumi devi. She's an expansion of Satyabhama Devi. Now what had happened was, when Varahadev had offered the son to Mother Bhumi could predict the future. Right? She knew. However, she had affection for a son. So she made the Lord make a promise. Let my son be killed only with my permission. Varahadev said, all right. Whatever you desire. So now, since he had to go and tackle Bhaumasur, now Bhumi Devi, how would she give permission? But Satyabhama, she could. So Krishna said, let me take the password along. There are hidden files there, I need password to open up those files. So he took Satyabhama Devi with him. She would go on an outing. And the fifth reason is given is, some time back, outing, picnic, shopping, adventure, she would give permission to kill Bhaumasur, who by now became famous as Narakasur. And finally, some time back, Narad Muni had come from the heavenly planets to Rukmini Devi's palace. And he said, hey Rukmini Devi, I have brought a wonderful gift from the heavenly planets for you, a Parijat flower. And Rukmini Devi accepted it as a gift from a saintly person and just placed it in her palace. Now the Parijat flower spread such fragrance throughout Dwarka that when it reached Satyabhama's palace, she said, what is there in Rukmini's palace that I don't have? Krishna kept quiet. You see, Krishna is in each palace. So in Satyabhama's palace, Krishna just kept quiet. So Satyabhama said, what is there? And Krishna just looked somewhere else. So Satyabhama sent someone to find out. And Rukmini Devi sent the message that I have received a Parijat flower. She says, you gave Parijat flower to Rukmini? Krishna said, I never did. It is Narad. You told Narad to give? I did not do that. Narad gave it without a permission. Something like that. Narad, how can Narad do that? Give her without permission, not give me? So anything, she was trying to blame Krishna. So ultimately Krishna said, Are Baba, what one flower? I mean, you are Satyabhama. You should have a whole Parijat tree. Oh really? You'll give me a Parijat tree? Definitely. So Krishna is wondering, afraid from a Parijat tree. So he said, nice. When I take the earrings back to heaven, I'll get a Parijat tree from there. So to get her a Parijat tree and to show her, Rukmini did not know whether it was really from, she believed Narad, but he had to show her specifically, this is from heaven, see, you were there, you brought it, this is a Parijat tree. So he took Satyabhama along. So they went to Pragjyotishpur. As soon as they reached, Krishna threw his club first. All the fortifications, rock fortifications, Swaha. Then he took his arrows and he shot few arrows. And all those remotely controlled, unmapped weapons discharged forever. Retired from duty. They were also finished. Then Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra inside. And Chakra went zzzz. And the Chakra, it dissolved all the ionized water. They evaporated. And Chakra went still inside. And all the poisonous gas was evaporated by the chakra. Then chakra went still inside. And the electricity barbed wire that was there was cut through by the chakra. And the chakra returned back to Krishna. So now Krishna went ahead with his chariot. So there was this Mura Pash now. The barbed electric wire created by Mura himself, which had this atomic iron particles in there. Krishna took his sword and went chop. Finished. All of his technological advancement of so many years, within 2 seconds, khatam. That is Kalosmi. When Kal, Krishna comes as Kal, it is not slow motion. I am coming. You know, Kal comes dancing like that and says, should I come? And you say, no, please wait. And he says, should I come? No, please wait. Doesn't happen like that, like this. Everything is down. Even if it is like Pak Jyotishpur, well fortified. Right? So then with his chop he went, and the Murapash was gone. And then Krishna took his Panchajanya conch shell and went, he made such a shankar nad. It was as if at the time of dissolution, the thunderclaps sound. Like that, as if dissolution, pralay had arrived. Now this sound awoke Mura. Mura, uttishtha, uttishtha, Muraya. So Mura got up hearing that Panchajanya sound. And the others who heard this sound, they went to sleep. Oh my God, what is this sound? So Mura got up with his five heads, brilliant as the sun at the time of dissolution. Brilliant, beautiful description in the Bhagavatam. Krishna's sound as a thunderclap at the time of dissolution. And Mura rises up as the sun, brilliant sun at the time of dissolution. And he looks around and sees Krishna and with his five, and he, first of all, he sees his barbed wire gone. Oh, my baby. With so much love and care, I had established this barbed wire. It's gone. So Mura, the scientist, was feeling very much dejected there. And then with his five mouths, he started roaring. And he looked at Krishna and saw Garuda. And when he saw Garuda, he became very angry at Garuda because his baby was gone. He wanted to kill Krishna's baby. You know, Krishna's extension, expansion, or whatever was his carrier. He wanted to attack that and destroy it, tit for tat. So he took his spear and threw it with full force at Tarksha, at Garuda. Garudji was simply sitting there and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Simply singing kirtan. But the Bhagavatam describes the sound of the spear floating, not floating, but piercing the atmosphere. It is such a screeching sound, you know, like tiger screech. Or you have static on radio, you know, like that. Screeching sound, and Mura's five heads shouting, terrorizing the entire planet, the 10 directions, the entire universe. And then they went to the covering of the universe, bounced there and came back as echo. So superior sound effects, you know, like Bose's speakers. Boom, boop, coming back like that. So his spear, Krishna just took two arrows and shot them at the spear and cut them into three parts. Ek pehle gira, dusra beech mein, aage teesra aisa. Adi, madhya, ant. Like that. Spear in three parts. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tarksha is going on singing kirtan. Mura becomes very angry. He says, all right, you destroyed my spear. Now I'll throw my club and destroy you. So he took his club and threw it at Krishna. Krishna threw his club. The Komoduki went and crashed with Mura's club. Mura's club broke into 1,000 fragments and fell down. Krishna's club came back to Krishna. Mura became so angry, forgot everything else. No, before that what Krishna did was, because Mura was shouting with his five mouths, Krishna took some arrows and ping, 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 ping into his mouth. Ah! Sound cut. This angered Mura so much that with his arms raised, he rushed at Krishna as if with his arms he's going to destroy Krishna. Krishna just sent a Sudarshan Chakra, chop. Mura's body fell forward, head fell behind. Mura was dead. Seeing this, Mura's seven sons, Tamara, Antariksha, Vibhavasu, Vasu, and some others, I don't even remember their name, Aruna, Shravana. And Vibhaswan, these are seven sons. Finally I got them, yeah. Seven sons. They became angry. You killed our father, Badala. Revenge. But then they said, oh, he never even got down from Garuda and my father is finished. So they stopped and said, Commander-in-Chief, you go ahead. So they arranged for the Commander-in-Chief called as Peeth. Bichara pit gaya wo bhi. Peeth was sent ahead. Hundreds and thousands of soldiers and the seven sons, they all rained their weapons, different clubs and lances and spears and arrows and stones, whatever they had, all of them was raining towards Krishna. Krishna just sent forth a shower of arrows and all of these weapons were turned into dust and they simply fell down. This angered all of them. They again attacked Krishna. Krishna sent more arrows. First Peeth was gone, then the seven sons were gone, then everyone else, someone's hands was cut, someone's neck was cut, someone's legs was cut, someone's belly was cut. There was a whole massive, you know, array, a display of cut bodies. Krishna conducted the anatomy of all of them, you know, dissection. Everyone finished. When this was being observed by Bhaumasur from inside his palace, really angered him so much that he personally came out riding on elephants. These are special elephants that Bhaumasur had captured. Not captured, but he had gotten from his mother specifically. Elephants that were born from the ocean of milk. These special elephants. And these elephants, when they came running out, they had all their mother, they had all their anger and passion in the form of that nectar that elephants had oozing out of their foreheads. Wild elephants, mad, intoxicated, drunk, trained to kill. Right? Not seven elephants. They were trained to kill. They all came. And Banasura was riding on them. Banasura saw Garuda and he threw his Shatagni weapon at him. Shatagni weapon is that weapon that can with one stroke kill hundreds of soldiers. And seeing that Shatagni weapon going towards Krishna and Garuda, all of his soldiers simultaneously sent hundreds of weapons towards Krishna. Krishna simply with his various beautifully feathered arrows cut down all of those weapons. Krishna said, all right, he took blue arrows and cut down some. He took feathered, they had blue feathers behind and yellow feathers behind and red feathers behind. It was like modern art, you know. One person, there was a modern art painting sent in a gallery, painting gallery. Oh, who's the artist? How did you do it? Oh, I just let my dog, you know, walk on it. Modern art. You splash something and try to make out. What does this mean? It's supposed to be psychological exercise, modern art. So Krishna was like doing modern art painting, you know, shooting arrows, but various colors, a panoramic view. Beautiful, different colored feathered arrows. And everything was destroyed. And finally, he killed all of Banasura's soldiers and Garuda with his wings started beating the elephants, and these elephants became afraid and they ran back into the palace. Banasura was left alone on the battlefield. So then Bana said, all right. He lifted that very spear, the spear that had, you know, rendered Indra's thunderbolt useless. He took it and threw it at Krishna. Actually, threw it at Garuda. And Garuda just stayed there, stationary, nothing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It was as if an elephant had been hit with a flower garland. What difference does it make? Right? Krishna, when he sat on top of that Mandara Parvat, when the Sagar Manthan, Samudra Manthan was going on, the Parvat stayed stationary. What to speak of Garuda? What can dislodge Garuda when Krishna is on top of him? Plus, Bhoo Devi is there, who holds everything stationary. So Garuda was unmoved. This angered Banasura very much. So he took up his club to throw at Krishna. And before he could do that, Krishna sent his discus and ping, Banasura finished. Right on his elephant, you know, he was finished. And his head fell down, looked glorious because it was decorated with such golden ornaments, a golden helmet and golden earrings. And after Banasura was finished, everyone started crying, "Hi, hi!" And others started crying, "Jai, jai!" And like, you know, Hindi movies, the police always comes at the end. So the demigods came at the end and started showering flowers. Wonderful, jai, jai, all glories to Krishna, all glories to Krishna. I told you, we don't need to go to 70 mm screens. Everything is here. And the sages came and they started chanting auspicious mantras for the glorification of Krishna. And that point of time, personified Bhumi Devi approached Krishna and said, "My dear Krishna, you are the beautiful personality who holds the Shankha, the Chakra, the Gada and the Padma in your hands, who to fulfill the desires of your devotees appears in various forms in various places. Your form is like a beautiful lotus flower. Your feet are like beautiful lotus flowers offering shelter to all the devotees. Your eyes are like beautiful lotus petals blooming. Your navel is like that. You are the source of everything. You are the super source. Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu, they are all your expansions. The entire material creation is simply existing by your desire. All the 16 elements are nothing but your own energy. You hold all of them within you. Still, you are unaffected by the modes of material nature. Here is the young son of Bhauma. He is very much fearful seeing his father dead and seeing all this battle. He hasn't done anything wrong. Kindly give him shelter, for you give shelter to the distressed. Please place your hand on him and wipe away all of his sins and kindly give him, bless him and give him shelter. When Krishna heard this submissive prayers of Bhumi Devi, who with folded hands was standing before him and bowing down her head and touching his lotus feet on the ground, Krishna became pleased with her and he blessed the son of Bhauma, Bhagadatta, who later on again came to participate in the Kurukshetra war, poor fellow, on the side of Kauravas. So he blessed him, Bhagadatta. And then Krishna entered Narakasura's palace. There he saw the beautiful palace and he saw all the wealth there. And then he saw 16,100 young maidens who had been captured by Narakasura and kept within his palace. All of them beautiful, full of all glorious qualities. Krishna saw them as he saw the jewels and the wealth in the palace. No change in his expression. And then the beautiful girls, they saw Krishna, the most glorious of all men. And as if, you know, destiny itself had brought to them such a glorious personality, within their hearts, each one of them accepted Krishna as the husband and sincerely prayed to Providence, "Oh dear Providence, allow us to have him as our husband." Sincerely they prayed. Because these girls had been captured by Narakasura, Srila Prabhupada in one lecture says, in India, even today, girls and ladies, they consider their chastity very important, more than life. Therefore, a young girl, if she's touched by someone, then no one else will marry her. Young boys, please don't take advantage of this. You know, like it is just like the caste system. You step on someone's shadow and that person becomes low caste. That's so duplicitous. So a person is very weak, doesn't have principles. So, but that is what is Vedic Prabhupada says. Even today in India, this was in 70s, I guess now India has changed, maybe. I pray that it has not. But if they are touched, so 16,100 of them had been captured by. So they couldn't, where would they go? And all of them were either, they were the maidens of wealthy personalities, rich people, or princesses themselves. They had nowhere else to go. So they looked at Krishna with pleading eyes. Eyes which said, please accept us. Krishna, as a super soul within the heart, understood their prayers. He liberated all of them, gave them wonderful garments, put them in beautiful palanquins with beautiful servants and things needed for their comfort, and sent them back to Dwarka, along with much of the wealth and horses and elephants and jewels from Pragjyotishpur. He sent everything back to Dwarka for King Ugrasen. Then he established Bhagadatta and said, you can rule this kingdom. And he told Satyabhama, chalo, anya loko ki sukham yatra. Let us go and have to the heavenly planets and have a good time there. So he goes back. Mother Bhumi also hands over, first she brings a Vaijanti mala, a never fading garland, and she garlands her own husband, Krishna, as a dutiful wife should. Then she offers Aditi's earrings back, Varuna's umbrella back, and the dominion. She signs the paper which says, Bhagadatta no longer has dominion over Maniparvat, it belongs back to the demigods. So Krishna took all of that along with Satyabhama, riding on Garuda, he went to Amaravati. Not by Amaravati Express, by Garuda Express. So he went to Amaravati, the palace, the kingdom, the capital of Swargaloka. Went to Indra. As soon as Indra Dev saw Krishna, he along with Sachi Devi, Indra with his beautiful helmet in front of all of his courtiers, all of the other demigods, he put that head with that glorious helmet at the lotus feet of Krishna and offered him respect along with Sachi Devi. He offered Krishna a good seat. He welcomed him. And then Krishna accepted his worship and said, here, these are things that belong to you, take it back. And Indra very thankfully accepted everything back. And then Krishna said, all right, I have to go back to Dwarka, I'm leaving. So Indra said, my dear Lord, thank you so much. I wish you could stay for a long time, but then you're the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. Krishna left for Dwarka. On the way, as he was passing through the gardens of Indra, he said, Satyabhama, pick up your Parijata tree. Which one do you want? Right? Because, see, Krishna had promised Satyabhama that I'll bring you a tree. He had never said that I will ask Indra to give a tree. So he did not ask Indra. He simply told Satyabhama, pick up a tree. Satyabhama said, that one. He said, pick it up. So she picked it up. When she picked it up, all the servants of the garden, they ran to Indra and said, they are taking Parijat tree, they are taking Parijat tree to earth, they are taking Parijat tree to earth. Indra became so angry, he called all the demigods. He said, look at this Krishna, he comes to our palace, we welcome him very nicely, and he steals. Let us catch the thief. So all the demigods, they attack Krishna. Krishna says, Swaha. Send Swahadevi ahead. Swahadevi finishes off everything. They are all defeated. Once again. And Krishna and Prabhupada said, just like a henpecked husband to fulfill the desires of his wife. You know, Krishna says, my wife, she wants Parijat tree, so what can I do? You know, he takes a tree, takes it down. She plants it in her own palace grounds. And the bumblebees from heaven, they find, oh my, where is our tree gone? So they all come down from there to the palace. With their beautiful musical sound, they create a wonderful atmosphere in Satyabhama's palace. Then Krishna finds a nice day. First, he establishes 16,100 palaces, puts each of these maidens in each of these palaces, finds a nice day to wed all of them at the same auspicious moment. He marries all of them in a beautiful ceremony and becomes their own individual husband forever. This is Krishna. You know? Krishna, he does not think, oh my God, 16,100 wives, what will I do now? If I visit one, how many years it will take to visit each one every day? I visited a friend recently in UK last year, and we went to Birmingham. One of my old classmates, actually two of them, they are married now, boy and girl. They were both my classmates. So they asked me, "Are you married?" I said, "No." "Will you get married?" I said, "I don't know." Non-committal. I said, it's really nice. It's really nice. I said, "Why?" He said, "Let me tell you a joke." I said, "All right, go on, tell a joke." He said, two men went to, you know, heaven. They were stopped at heaven and said, "Why do you, what makes you think that you can come into heaven? You know, why should we allow you into heaven?" So one man said, "I was married to my wife for 50 years. He said, "You deserve to come into heaven. Enjoy now." The second one, he's really very enthusiastic. Something is really making him very happy, he says. So he asked him, "Why should you come into heaven?" He said, "I was married two times." He said, "You go back. You cannot come into heaven." He said, why? See, he was married one time and you gave him heaven, complete enjoyment. I'm married two times, you give me twice the enjoyment. He said, "No. Heaven is meant for enjoyment for the people who are distressed, not those who are stupid." So this was my friend who told me this joke. So anyways, so Krishna was not like that. I just remembered that. 16,100 wives. I should go to heaven and enjoy 16,100 times. No, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And each of these girls are expansions of Lakshmi, the goddesses of fortune. And for Krishna to expand and enjoy with all of them as a husband or live with all of them as a, you know, doting husband, doesn't take much energy. He can do it very easily because he is all powerful. So Krishna not only lived as a husband, he satisfied them completely. And whenever Krishna would come into the palaces, each of these beautiful wives of his had hundreds of beautiful maid servants to serve them. But when Krishna would come, they would personally come and serve Krishna. They would wash his lotus feet. They would wipe it with cloth with their own hands. They would serve him food which they had cooked personally. They would eat whatever remnants were there. Left. They would fan him with their own hands. They would sing songs from him. In this way, they tried to please Krishna totally. Dedicated themselves totally to Krishna as their husbands. And Krishna blessed each one of them with 10 sons. This is only Krishna's family in Dwarka. Right? So, in this way, Krishna satisfied those 16,100 maidens. Then Mohan told me on the phone, "Prabhuji, after that I felt really sleepy and I told my grandmother, please finish." So that is Vishala Hridayam. But then Mohan said, "My grandmother told me something very important. She said, Mohan, it is very nice to hear stories. And it is best to hear the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they are purifying. But one must learn lessons from them." So Mohan said, "Grandma, what lesson should I learn from this?" So grandmother said, "The first lesson, my dear son, is to learn that the safest position for any soul is to be in Krishna's refuge as his devotee. To be under his shelter as his devotee." There are various verses from the Bhagavatam. I will not be quoting them. Maybe some at that time. Because they are beautiful verses which each one of them illustrate these points. There's the translations. "Obeisances unto you, O Lord of the chief demigods, O holder of the conch shell, the disc and club, O supreme soul within the heart. You assume your various forms to fulfill your devotee's desires." Can you imagine? As many desires we have as a devotee, Krishna assumes so many forms. So that is the safest position to be in, to be Krishna's devotee. Lesson number two that grandmother said. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshan, the goddess of fortune, or indeed even my own self is as dear to me as you are. Second lesson is, it is our greatest fortune and greatest advantage to be his devotee. Because a devotee of Krishna is more dear to him than even himself. That is Krishna's declaration. So lesson number two. The first lesson is, safest position is to be a devotee. Second lesson is, our greatest advantage and fortune is to be a devotee. This is for our fortune to be his devotee. Lesson number three. Anyone in the entire world who lives, even a chandala, who lives by eating a dog, is immediately purified if it takes bath in hearing my glories, my name, my fame, etc. Now, O Kumara, since you have realized me without doubt and have become my devotees, therefore I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm if its conduct is found hostile to you. If this arm, it goes against my devotee, I will chop off my arm, Krishna says. So lesson number three, Krishna always protects his devotees. Yes, he always protects his devotees. Lesson number four, my dear Lord, this is from our chapter today only. This is the son of Bhaumasur. He's frightened. He's approaching you. Please remove his distress and give him refuge. Please protect him. Place your lotus hand which dispels all sins upon his head. Lesson number four. Only Krishna can help us in distress. No one else. So only Krishna can help us in distress. He can only give us that protection in distress. Lesson number five. Again from our chapter today. Even after Indra had bowed down to Lord Achyuta and touched his feet with the tips of his crown and begged the Lord to fulfill his desire, that exalted demigod, having achieved his purpose, chose to fight. Dhikkar hai use, aur dhikkar hai uske Aishwarya ko. Damn his wealth and damn his position. This is what the sages are saying. That damn that position, damn that status, damn that wealth, for which we go to Krishna, and after he gives it to us, we go against him. Lesson number five. Our tendency is to always be proud and forgetful, specifically of what Krishna has given us. Very important lesson. We tend to forget what we have received from Krishna, and we become ungrateful because of pride. Lesson number six. Therefore, one must be very careful to always remember our identity. Never forget it. Chaitanya Das Moi, Chaitanya Das, Chaitanya Das Moi, Tanra Das Das. I am eternally servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am eternally the Lord of servant of Lord Chaitanya. Eternally the Lord of the eternally the servant of Lord Chaitanya. Indeed, I am the servant of the servant of Lord Chaitanya. Teen bar kehne par dimag mein ghusta hai, servant hai hum. Uske baad keh sakte hain servant of servant. Pehli baar hi bolenge na servant of servant, to fir khali boss anu boss anu boss. It's very difficult. Therefore, again and again, we have to remind ourselves of what our identity is. We are Nitya Krishna Das. So, lesson number one, safest position is to be Krishna's refuge. Lesson number two, we must feel fortunate to be Krishna's devotee and know it is to our great advantage. Lesson number three, Krishna always protects his devotees even if it is at the risk of his own bodily limbs. Lesson number four, only Krishna can help us in distress. Lesson number five, we have the tendency to be proud and forgetful of Krishna's mercy and be ungrateful. Lesson number six, therefore always remember our eternal identity. So first one is safe, Second one is advantage. Third one is protect. Fourth one is helps. Only Krishna helps. Fifth one is, we have tendency to be arrogant, forgetful. And sixth one is our identity. S for safe, A for advantage, P for protect, H for help, A for arrogance, and I for identity. Always remember Safai. This is what Mohan told me. He said, my mother, grandmother told me, beta, always do Safai. Safai, Safai, Safai. Six lessons that we can get from this particular episode. And Vishala Hridayam, why did we name the topic Vishala Hridayam? Because Krishna is large-hearted. First, only for the sake of his devotees, the demigods, he went to Pragjyotishpur. He did not have his own agenda to fulfill. That is large-heartedness. For his devotees, he went out. For Satyabhama's sake, he went to heaven to get the Parijat flower. Right? So, wives, if you want husbands, Krishna is there. Yes? Perfect henpecked husband. For his wife, he went to get the Parijat flower. Large-heartedness. Which husband can do like that? It takes a lot to do like that. Married 16,100 just to fulfill their desire. You really need a large heart for that. He reciprocated fully with each one of them. That is large-heartedness. And finally, he gave protection to the son of Narakasura. You know, not that, nahi nahi, bachche ko hi maar do, aage chal kar wo yaad rakhega, badla lega. That is how today's conquerors behave. Krishna is large-hearted. He gave protection to the son of Narakasura too. So let us regularly do Safai. Remembers Krishna's quality as being Vishal Hridayam, especially because of this episode of killing of Narakasura, which in India is celebrated, many of us may know, maybe we do not know it is celebrated as Choti Diwali. When Ramchandra killed Ravan on Vijayadashmi and came back to Ayodhya, the festival of victory was celebrated as Dipavali or Diwali. Similarly, the killing of Narakasura and liberating 16,100 wives or maidens and bringing them back to Dwarka is celebrated as Choti Diwali. So this is the moment of Choti Diwali. So wish all of you a very happy Choti Diwali and a very, very happy Badi Diwali. Govardhan Puja, Happy New Year, everything. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Safai principle ki, Tai Gaura Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.